Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friend, have stumbled upon the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of May 2019. Welcome to episode 70 of your monthly paranormal variety show. Having your hair is better than, you know, back when you were in school and you'd have a sick day and you'd sit home and watch The Price is Right. Yeah. Because you're wonderful, a masterpiece, beautifully made, important to people because you're important to me, highly favored by your creator, whether that's God or by the law of averages and physics working in tandem, you, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, you are family and we are one. Word to your mother. Mother's Day. It's coming. Don't forget to get your mommies a card and some chocolates or, you know, God knows what they're into these days. I don't know, man. You know. I wish my mom was super cool and wanted to go see Avengers with me. That would have been all right. Did you guys check out that movie yet? Did you see the end game? Huh? I'm not going to spoil anything. I'm going to say this to you, though. Deadly movie. Super great. You know? Way, way better than an episode of The Simpsons where they called us all a bunch of stupid doofies, though. Oh, that never went over well. That never went over well. That was like a fart in church here in Newfoundland. But, you know, South Park made fun of us, too, a lot, and way worse in the video game and their movie back in, like, I think it was 98 or 9 or something. They had the South Park movie. Remember Blame Canada? Blame Canada! Yeah, the video game is really, really bad. So don't play that South Park game. This the stick of truth, if you're wondering. Oh, my. My mom means the world to me. I know that much. And with Mother's Day just around the corner, I think you guys are going to really like this episode because Laura is going to be talking about some crazy moms in nature. And Betty is going to be talking about, well, giving birth to ideas and stuff. It's going to be really, really cool. So those two segments are going to be awesome. And then later in the show, I got my guest coming on. And she is just advocate for homeopathic therapies for breast cancer, basically. But the name of her book, Fighting for Our Tits, is probably the best name for a book ever. And, you know, when I think of empowered women and I think of women fighting every day and, you know, whether you believe in the whole homeopathy approach to fighting cancer or you're all about the medical science part or maybe a mixture of both, it doesn't matter. It's still an empowering subject to people. And I'm actually really, really glad to report that when it comes to cancer in my family, we've been blessed. Yet again, Dad has officially done his treatments. I told you guys that. He's been waiting on a PET scan now, which means that basically the doctor's going to tell him what the plan is from there if there's no sign of cancer. And not only was his Hodgkin's lymphoma completely obliterated, yeah, he beat it. Not only did he beat it, but he also didn't see any of his other cancers budge. So that means that Dad is, well, pretty much in remission. So, I mean, I'm in a great mood, as you can probably tell from my voice. I had a great, great April. I really did. And let's just say the Easter Bunny was extra good to me. Lots going on, as you can tell. I'm all over the place on my little intro here. But, just want to say to you guys, thanks so much for taking the time. I hope you guys had a safe and happy Easter. I hope you guys enjoyed your Avengers Endgame, and I hope everyone's loving their Game of Thrones endings. And, oh my God, there's just so many amazing endings. It's just great month. And, I feel like there's a lot of endings going on in my life. Did you ever feel like that before? Like, there's all these loose ends getting tied up, and it's almost like we're getting ready for a new phase, you know? We're getting into new things. And, if your little heart didn't go pitter-patter a few episodes ago when I told you how fast time is passing, next episode, okay, which is my June 1st episode, we're halfway through the year. Let that sink in. How in the hell are we halfway through 2019 already? It's crazy. Time's going way too fast. But you know what? Just because time's going fast doesn't mean I'm going to, be trying to catch up with it. I'm trying to get in shape. Remember I told you about this last month when I was on? I mentioned that, you know what? If I don't talk about working out and stuff like that, you guys can bust my ass online. Well, guess what? Save your comments for another time, because this man has been working out 3 to 4 times a week for the last 5 weeks straight, and he feels very tired and achy. Oh my God, I have a new respect for people who do this when they're older. Like, when I was in my 20s, working out was awesome. I'd be a bit sore, but then I'd be like, yeah, let's go party. Now I'm like, oh my God, like, I gotta plan my day and meals around this just to get it done. I kind of felt like Rocky, that Rocky movie, the one that came out, I can't remember now. Oh God, it was a long time ago now, but the one where he makes the big comeback as an old man and takes on the new up-and-comer, and they're like, you're too full of arthritis, Rock, we're gonna have to go for the meat and make you lift heavy, which is pretty much what I'm doing. So, it's heavy everything, and I'm figuring after about 6 or 9 months of heavyweight training, I'll, get into some total body stuff and get the old diet going. Well, they call it a dirty bulk when you eat, well, I'm not going to say everything you want, but, you're not watching your calories too much. You're just trying to get enough in you to get you to get bigger so that when the time comes to cut the fat, you got a big furnace. And, yeah, it's official. We're all going on vacation this time next year, so I want to look nice and pretty. I know what you're going to say. There's nothing I can do to work out for the neck up. Anyway, I'm keeping up with it. I hope you guys have been keeping up with your goals as well. I mean, my God, we're very, very close to the end of this. Very, very close to this. Halfway mark. Like, ugh. I mean, your own mortality, it got to come up at some point in your life. It really does. Like, it comes up with me all the time. I'm like, man, like, time is going so fast. Like, am I doing okay? Am I doing all right? And, then I get comments from people online, some just really kind words over the last few weeks about my show and inviting me to be a part of their show. And, I'm actually really excited to say that my friend Kat Ward, you may know her as a past guest. She's been on twice. In fact, it'd be 3, maybe 4 years now since I had her on. Actually, for a Mother's Day special. So this would mark, pretty sure, like the 3 or 4 year anniversary of having Kat on for the first time. And lo and behold, she got into podcasting a few years later. And bless her heart, she's got the paranormal podcast called Paranormal Heart. And I've decided to move one of my old segments, which is Oddities. If you guys can remember that, it's been a few months since I've done it, to her show. Just to give her some new content and hopefully reach some new listeners. So I'd love for you guys to give her some love, so we say, a little paranormal heart in the coming months when I actually release my stuff on that show. And, and vice versa. I would like for some of her listeners to come in too, because I'm like really, really well known on Podbean, but on YouTube, I'm a nobody. So the opposite's the same with Kat. So there you go. There's just benefits to all this. It's not going to change the format of my show at all. I decided to put Oddities on there because, well, I love Oddities, but my show's too blessed long as it is. Man, between the guest and the words for your consideration from Betty and, the Dr. Laura's Lair and the news and the, oh my God, we're always clocking over an hour on this show. And bless everyone's heart. It's a just wonderful show. And if I can get out there on other people's shows, why not? I promised you bonus content. You're going to get your bonus content. I have been in touch with an old psychic friend of mine. Ha-ha, not going to say who it is. Former guest on the show, who is going to be doing a bonus episode with me, and I'm going to be releasing it next month. So keep an eye out for that. And you never know, you might see some other things go up over the next few months. Some different things. Anyway, guys, enough of this bantering on. It's been almost 10 minutes now. You guys never came here to talk to me about my life. You came to talk to me about the other life, the weird one, the strangest and weirdest things that have been going on all around us. Yeah, I'm talking about the paranormal news.
Somewhere between the funnies and the obituaries is... Oh, yes. The paranormal news.
Sightings of a Victorian-era ghost has been going viral. The story of a woman who saw a ghostly figure in a frozen food aisle has gone viral on social media. Christiana Bush, who works in the bakery department of a Market Basket supermarket in Wellington, Massachusetts, recalls the moment she caught sight of an old woman wearing a Victorian-era nightgown and hair cap standing in the frozen food aisle of the store. She looked down for just a second, and when she looked back up, the woman had disappeared. She looked kind of like melancholy and a little angry, said Bush. After asking on Facebook if anyone else has seen a ghost in that store, her story ended up going viral, leading to local news coverage and prompting customers to start keeping a lookout while doing their shopping in case the alleged spook happened to make another appearance. It's like, I can just hear the radio in the supermarket now. Specter on aisle one. Even U.S. Congressman Seth Moulton of Massachusetts wrote about the story on Twitter. I had no idea it was going to blow up, said Bush. I mean, I just posted a random status on Facebook saying, hey, has anyone seen a ghost? Because I just wanted to connect with people. Market Basket has since moved to reassure shoppers that there's nothing to fear. As far as we know, all of our stores are ghost-free, said spokesperson Justin Griffin. And, just, like, how do you guarantee that? All our stores are ghost-free. We had the place sprayed. Like, just crazy. Anyway, here, listen to the news story. It's actually pretty cool.
I actually don't believe in ghosts until this moment happened to me. I was writing on a cake for a customer here, and then when I turned around to get walk back to the customer, the little lady was chilling over there. So she was right here, just staring at me.
Very, very interesting stuff. And, you know, there's other crazy stuff going on in the news all the time. You guys know this. If you're a fan of my show at all, you definitely know, right? Time for us to talk about something even stranger. You've probably seen this picture on Facebook. There's these four dudes, okay? And they're, like, decked out in the camo gear and just making Florida real proud right now. The four men, and they're all, I'd say they're probably stretched out about 10 feet wide. And they have this immense, immense snake in their hands. Okay. It's huge. It's a record breaker. 17-foot python found in Florida. The huge snake was tracked down by a team at the Big Cypress National Preserve in the Florida Everglades. Thought to be the largest snake ever found in the region, this gargantuan pregnant female, happy Mother's Day, python measures just over 17 feet in length and weighs a whopping 140 pounds. The sheep I just ate make me look fat. Maybe I'm just a little big around the hips. The snakes were first introduced into the region in the 1980s and have since gained a significant foothold, resulting in a major decline in raccoons, opossums, and bobcats, as well as the near total disappearance of some rabbit and fox species. To catch this particular individual, the team not only removes the invasive snakes, but collects data for research, develops new removal tools, and learns how the pythons are using the preserve, the team wrote on Facebook. All of the python work at Big Cypress is focused on controlling this invasive species, which poses a significant threat to native wildlife. This thing poses a threat to everything living on the planet. It's 17 frickin' feet long. Think about that. 17 feet. I mean, come on, man. Like, this is a horror movie waiting to happen. Like, all you need is a tornado. Throw it in it. There you go. You got Snakenado. Brand new movie. Everyone's going to love it. Jeez. Oh, man. I've been looking for an excuse to play this song, so I'm just going to go right ahead. The first ever image of a black hole has finally been revealed in a major breakthrough. Astronomers have achieved the impossible by capturing an image of a distant black hole. This particular supermassive black hole, which measures a staggering 40 billion kilometers across, is located at the center of the distant Messier 87 galaxy, which lies approximately 55 million light years away. The ring of fire surrounding the black hole is caused by dust and gas falling into its center. The object is so bright that it puts out more light than all the stars in the host galaxy combined. The image itself was captured using the Event Horizon Telescope, EHT for short, a network of 8 radio telescopes situated around the world. So it was a group effort. Black holes are the most mysterious objects in the universe, said EHT director Shepard Dolman. We have seen what we thought was unseeable. We have taken a picture of a black hole. The groundbreaking image will help to revolutionize our understanding of these enigmatic objects. For astrophysicists, these are exciting times indeed. And you know, you don't have to look very far to find interesting things online. And I actually posted this on our Facebook page. Yes, the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast has a Facebook page. I know you guys aren't on there. It hasn't got a whole lot of people there, but to the souls who are on it, thanks so much. And of course, just look up Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast on Facebook and drop a like, you know, and see all the weird news stuff I put up, like this one. Just to say this one had quite the buzz about it. Miracle, they said. A miracle. As bees survive the Notre Dame blaze, three hives containing a population of over 180,000 bees were left unscathed by this week's devastating fire. Of course, this is a little earlier in the month, April 20th. Despite the roof of the historic Parisian cathedral being shrouded in flames, the hives, which were situated on the roof of the building's first floor, survived without so much as a scratch. Thank goodness the flames didn't touch them, said beekeeper Nicholas John. It's a miracle. For several days following the fire, it was unclear whether or not the hives had been destroyed. It wasn't until aerial photos were taken and it was possible to confirm that they had survived. It was incredibly sad about Notre Dame because it's such a beautiful building, and as a Catholic, it means a lot to me, said John. But to hear there is life when it comes to the bees, that's just wonderful. Beekeeping on rooftops is surprisingly common in Paris, with several prominent buildings hosting their own hives as part of a concerted effort to help curb the decline in bee population. In total, there are thought to be at least 700 hives spread across this city alone, which was actually a really interesting thing. I had no idea about that. Like, that's so cool and such a noble thing. We all know that I think it's like a quarter or maybe even a third of our food supply is reliant on the pollinators. And most of them are bees. And any species going extinct is a huge impact on all of us. And I'm not just thinking about us. I'm thinking about our kids, right? So, man, oh, man, 700 hives all across Paris. I mean, that's epic. And not only that, though. Man, this whole thing was really, really strange. I also reported about the you know, building actually burning down, the Notre Dame Cathedral. When it burned down, did you know that on that building are some of the most prime examples of gargoyle protectors ever? They have some of the most beautiful statues on the side of that building, and gargoyles were put there to protect the building, okay? So the old folklore goes that these are the protectors that keep intruders away and bad things happening. And it just so happened that the day before the blaze, they took down a bunch of the gargoyles on that side of the building. Had them taken down just for a routine repair. They must do that probably every, like, say, 20 or 30 years. And the gargoyles were gone and the place burned down. So what does that tell you? Tell me about it. What does that tell you? Man, I'll tell you what it tells me. It tells you that Disney cartoon was right. Just not to do it. But it all can't be fun and games. I do have to talk about something that's kind of sad. And, you know, what can I say? You know, we lost Art Bell not too long ago. And it killed me because, like, when I think of my childhood and I think of names that come up, I think of him. And now we've lost somebody else. Her name, of course, is Lorraine Warren. And she is probably one of the most prominent paranormal investigators really ever, her and her husband more so. But, man, just somebody who's so prevalent in the field, who spoke at so many conventions, been a part of so many movies and shows, just a really well-known person in the field. Warren and her husband, Ed, had been the inspiration behind The Conjuring and the Amityville Horror, of course. The pair, who in 1952 founded the New England Society of Psychic Research, investigated some 10,000 cases of paranormal activity and wrote numerous books about their experiences. Lorraine herself professed to be a clairvoyant medium, while her husband Edward was a World War II U.S. Navy veteran and former police officer, as well as a self-taught demonologist. Together, the Warrens became famous for their investigations into several prominent cases, including the Enfield poltergeist, the haunted doll Annabelle, the Snedeker House case, and the haunting of the Smurl family, among others. Their investigations would go on to inspire a number of TV shows and movies, including several films in the Conjuring franchise, which also featured portrayals of Ed and Lorraine themselves in the movies. Lorraine sadly passed away at the age of 92, finally joining her husband, who passed back in August 2006. She died peacefully in her sleep at home, said her son-in-law, Tony Spera. She was a remarkable, loving, compassionate, and giving soul. To quote Will Rogers, she never met a person she didn't like. She was an avid animal lover and contributed to many animal charities and rescues. She was wonderful and giving to her entire family. May God bless her and rest her soul. What an incredible life. That's a life we got to celebrate in the paranormal field. Lorraine Warren, when I think of Lorraine Warren, I think of that mother figure, which is so suitable for this podcast this month as we go into Mother's Day. And I think of her almost like a mother to all paranormal investigators. And, you know, this is a loss I feel. I used to be a paranormal investigator, and I think that's why this loss is really getting to me, because I've studied her work. And I think Art Bell really got to me because I studied his work. I wanted to be like Art Bell. So there you go. She's up there with Ed now. And I'm sure she's probably having a word with God about what the heck's been going on in her life. There's no doubt about it. My goodness. We had a lot of strange stories tonight. A lot of weird ones. The first ever picture of a black hole, which was so cool. We had yet another haunting being recorded. We had, unfortunately, the death of Lorraine Warren and a couple of other things. Those bees that survived. Guys, what can I say? All these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
And welcome to Dr. Nora's lair. Power on. Uh-oh.
Thanks, John. Happy May. I hope your spring is going well and that lots of new little life is starting to spring up all around you in nature. May means lots of different things to different people. Flowers, Cinco de Mayo, Cinco de Cuatro, May 2-4, cabin time. But for many of us, we also think of moms. Mommies, mothers, grannies, nannies, bubbies, grandmothers. And there's a lot of science behind moms. It's not all just dirty diapers, boogers, and laundry. Pregnancy actually changes the body, but the stretch marks get all the glory. A much cooler side effect of gestation is that moms carry little pieces of their children with them for years to come. It's called microchimerism. The placenta separates the blood flow of mom and baby, but a handful of fetal cells cross this barrier and actually get lodged in mom's body. Scientists have found that these little cells can persist for years or even decades. The role of these cells, if any, remains mysterious. But a 2012 study found that DNA from a child's cells could even end up in mom's brain. Now, I think we've all heard from our moms that, oh, you are hurting my brains. Sure, Igor's mom has even said, stop chewing on my brain. Research in rodents has found that having offspring changes the brain. When pregnant, moms-to-be, rats, gain new smell-related neurons, perhaps to better recognize her baby's scent with. These changes persist throughout the mom's life, according to a 2011 study. The human brain is not immune from pregnancy-related change either, and I think most moms would tell us that without any research. A yet unpublished study presented on May 7th at the annual conference of the British Psychological Society found that pregnant women use the right side of their brain more than new moms when looking at images of adult and baby faces sporting different emotions. The effect was strongest when pregnant women were processing happy faces, the researchers reported. The changes may be part of promoting the mother-baby bond after birth, they suggested. Previous studies have found that pregnant women and new moms get a boost in their ability to read facial emotions, and these brain changes may be related. Now, moms have historically tried to guide our love lives. The pushy in mother-in-law is a time-honored stereotype, but maybe it's time to cut mom a break. She may have done more for your love life than you think. A close and warm relationship with mom during childhood predicts better relationships later in life, according to research presented at the 2010 annual meeting of the Association for Psychological Science. Maternal help in the romance department may even cross the species barrier. Another 2010 study, this one published in the journal Nature Communications, found that low-ranking male bonobos get more chances to mate when mom is around. Whew, that's some hot stuff. Moms play matchmaker by allowing their sons into their social circles, and they'll even chase away their rival males. Not really feeling lovey-dovey? Good news. A strong bond with mom can also help kids make friends, too. If your mom seems to worry a lot, you probably aren't imagining things. Having a baby can make people a little bit obsessive, it turns out. Northwestern University researchers studied new moms when their babies were 2 weeks and 6 months old and found that 11% had significant symptoms of obsessive-compulsive disorder, such as fear of germs or compulsion to check and recheck the baby monitor. In comparison, only about 2 to 3% of the general population has these symptoms, the researchers reported in 2013 in the Journal of Reproductive Medicine. When taken to an extreme, these symptoms can be harmful, the researchers wrote. But some worries are probably normal and adaptive. Taking care of a newborn baby is pretty tough work, after all. The increase in obsessive symptoms may be the result of stress or maybe postpartum hormones. A really cool thing is that you knew your mother's voice before you were even born. 2003 study out of Queen's University in Canada, published in the journal Psychological Science, found that the fetal heart races faster when hearing a recorded poem read by its own mother compared to when the poem is read by a stranger's voice. The study was conducted in the third trimester when the babies were nearly ready to be born. Another study from the University of Montreal found that a newborn baby brain is as responsive as the fetal heart. When moms made a short A sound, the left hemisphere of brand new baby's brains became active, while the right hemisphere became active when a stranger spoke, the researchers reported in 2010 in the journal Cerebral Cortex. The right hemisphere of the brain is linked to voice recognition, while the left processes language and motor skills. So mom's voice may be actually laying the groundwork for baby's first words and vocal development. This vocal maternal superpower continues long past the baby stage. Hearing a mother's voice eases older children's stress just as much as a real-life hug, according to a 2010 study. The sound of mom's voice lowers a child's stress hormone, cortisol, and raises his or her level of oxytocin, the hormone linked with loving and bonding. Now, not surprisingly, a study at the University of Illinois concluded that teenagers are safer drivers with their moms around them. No surprise there. But that's not all they found. The researchers determined that having mom nearby actually affected activity in the teen's brain. 25 teen drivers were asked to complete a driving simulation test as quickly as possible. At each intersection, the driver had a choice of running a yellow light or stopping for it, which cost them 3 extra seconds of time. When they were by themselves, the drivers ran the red light 55% of the time. When mom was nearby, that dropped to 45%. And here's the cool part. When a driver was alone, scans showed his or her brain's reward centers became more active when they ran yellow lights. But when their moms were next to them, the same thing happened in their brains when they stopped it. We're always good for our mommies. Now, this one's for your moms. For all you moms who don't think you spend enough time with your kids, please cut yourself a break. Research published in the Journal of Marriage and Family says the quality of time parents spend with their children doesn't make much of a difference in how they turn out, particularly during what would seem to be an impressionable period from the ages of 3 to 11. The quantity of parent-child time matters a bit more with teenagers. More one-on-one time can help adolescents stay out of trouble. But overall, the researcher suggests that it's about the quality of time, not the quantity of time, that's spent together. What makes a big difference, they say, is how warm and affectionate a mother is. So why does it always seem that moms are able to hear their babies cry before anyone else does? Or, as my mom said, that she has eyes in the back of their head and she can see what we're always doing and she can hear what we're always up to. Well, it does appear like it has to do with oxytocin, also known as the cuddle hormone. Scientists at New York University say that as oxytocin surges in a mother's brain after childbirth, it actually changes the way auditory signals are processed and makes her brain more sensitive to the sound of her baby's cries. Not only did the researchers find that this to be the case with mother mice, but even when a virgin mice were given oxytocin, they actually started to act like mothers, responding to the cries of baby mice and even carrying those little mice back to their little nest. Do you know a stinky mom might be a good thing? Well, children start learning fear early in their lives, taking cues from the odor of their mothers. In a paper researched published in the Proceedings of National Academy of Scientists, researchers from the University of Michigan and New York University reported on what they observed in mother and baby rats. The mothers had learned to fear the smell of peppermint, and they taught this fear to the babies through the alarm odor released when they sensed the peppermint smell. Explained by neuroscientist Jack Debiak, who led the research, before they can even make their own experiences, basically babies acquire their mother's experiences. For years, some mothers whose babies drop their pacifiers on the ground might pick it up, suck it clean, and pop it back in the infant's mouth. I'm pretty sure we've all seen this. Experiments, including the New York City Department of Health, wildly recommended against doing this. But this year, Swedish researchers came up with an unexpected finding about this seemingly gross habit. Parents who do it may have kids with a significantly lower rate of allergies, eczema and asthma, and other autoimmune diseases. This is only a correlation, not a causation, of course, but it fits with the hygiene hypothesis, that the idea that recent increases in many autoimmune diseases are the result of over-sanitizing children's environments, which prevents a kid's immune system from learning how to differentiate between trivial threats and those serious ones. Sharing that spit may be one way of exposing a baby or a child to these crucial microbes. This one isn't really biology related, but it's a really interesting piece of science about the concept of motherhood. Recently, a team of linguists analyzed cognates shared by a range of different language families. This includes Uralic, which includes Finnish and Hungarian, Dravidian, which includes South Indian languages, and Inuit Yupik, which includes Arctic languages. Back when woolly mammoths roamed the earth, humans said a word similar to how we do today. By mapping the word's relationships over time and using what we already know about the rates at which languages mutate over time, they found that there are at least 23 ultra-conserved words that are shared between all these languages because they've changed relatively little since about 15,000 years ago. In other words, back when glaciers still covered most of Europe and North America, and the woolly mammoths roamed around, humans have been saying these words in pretty similar way to how we do today. Among them, these words included fire, worm, old, spit, and of course, our dear mother. The fact that our ancestors were saying mother so long ago might not be a huge shock, but its inclusion on this list hints at how essential mothers really are to the human experience as a whole. Thank you to all the mothers out there. We thank you for your sacrifices, your dedication, and of course, for all the science. Back to you, John.
Welcome from Betty, your Oracle, with words of wisdom for your consideration for this month of May. Today's topic is one most of us know to be an important day in May, Mother's Day, a wonderful day to honor those women in our lives who in some cases gave birth to us, in some cases people who have been nurtured as adults. Consider the female who did the nurturing, a mother figure. Mother figures come in all sizes and shapes and many different forms. One mother a lot of us forget to honor on Mother's Day is Mother Earth. And some would argue that we have Earth Day to do that. And of course we do. Excuse me, in both cases, there are no wrongs. But I would like to add to this Mother's Day theme, our mothers, Mother Earth, all should be honored every day. Let's all show some gratitude daily for these incredible mothers. Even if they aren't your mother, it's a woman that you look up to and you feel nurtured by. Then, of course, comes the idea that mothers give birth, which means mothers get pregnant. So, according to Google, pregnant means a woman or female animal having a child or a young developing in the uterus or full of meaning, significant or suggestive, excuse me, synonyms charged, heavy, replete, teeming, full of, abounding, meaningful, significant, eloquent, suggestive, expressive, pointed, telling, revealing. interesting. So, how about May being pregnant with potentiality? Google describes potentiality, or potential, according to Google, as an adjective, having or showing the capacity to become or develop into something in the future, as a noun, latent qualities or abilities that may be developed and led to future success or usefulness. Physics, the quality determining the energy of mass in a gravitational field or of charge in an electric field. Believe it or not, I only learned that today when I looked it up. I did not realize that physics was included in the word potential. So putting pregnant with potentiality together, we're saying that this month, May, is full of meaning, with the capacity to become or develop into something very successful. It's a very interesting way to think about the month of May. So, we all have hopes and dreams as well. We've had them all our lives. What are we doing to nurture them or realize those hopes and dreams before we release them? How do we begin to realize our hopes and dreams? As I heard Gary Zukav, the author of The Seat of the Soul and The Heart of the Soul, yesterday on Oprah's Super Soul Sunday, suggested maybe starting a happiest moment of the day journal, sitting at night before you go to sleep, and writing the happiest moment of the day. So you're taking that, as Dr. Wayne Dyer would say, you're taking that and letting that percolate all night long. Good thoughts before sleep at night. Personally, I keep a gratitude journal, and every morning I write in my journal about the things that happened yesterday, how grateful I am for each and everything that happened, how much I love myself. And quite often through that page, I've written, I love you, I love you, I love you. I do it all the time, and I do it every day. So as well as keeping the happiest moment of the day journal, a morning journal for gratitude for the night's sleep you got, gratitude for and even if you didn't, gratitude for being awake in the middle of the night to see the stars that hour of the night. Will you dream a dream and think that it's too big to reach for? Or will you be the type who tells yourself, if I'm gonna dream, I will dream big? Why belittle myself? And any of the gurus out there, you know, the Dr. Wayne Dyers and the Deepak Chopras and the Gary Zukavs and whatnot, they will all tell us, if we're going to dream, dream big, dream bigger and even bigger. But sometimes when we do that, once we've dreamed the dream and we see it being realized, do we accept it? Or let its wonder and amazement pass by due to our fear-based thinking? Oh no, now everything's going to change. There's only one constant in life that we can be absolutely sure of, and that's change. Happens minute to minute, day to day, hour to hour. And if we don't get on board the change train, it won't pass us by. It'll take us with it. But we will end up not happy with where we're going, not happy with what we're doing. But we want to be happy with what we're doing. We want to accept with an open heart. And this is the hard part for a lot of people. it's, you realize, you know, you've dreamed this huge big dream and you can see it. It's about to happen. It's about to happen. And you push it away just by thinking, oh no, oh no, I'm not going to be able to handle that change. I'm not going to be able to handle that change. But if your heart is open and your arms are open even wider because you want this with everything that you have, you can revel in the manifestation of this. And do you realize that your inner child is calling you to accept what you've manifested, not reject it? Your inner child will never look for rejection. Your inner child always looks for acceptance. And I talked about gifts. So gifts and dreams, and yes, each and every one of us has been given a gift. Everyone on this earth, any living soul, has been given gifts. Gifts of, we have people who bake amazing, amazing things that we eat. We have people who sew. We have people who build houses. We have people who, we need everybody. We need the clerk who works at the supermarket. We need the clerk who works at Murray's. We need the clerk who works at, you know, the little corner store. We need all of these people. They have a gift, and their gift might be just a smile, just the way they interact with people. But when we're given these gifts, so we're given a gift that we know we have, we know we're capable of. It's something that we can do that maybe your neighbor can't do, or the friend across the street can't do. Or are you necessarily going to use that gift? Does someone have to force you into using that gift? Does someone have to say to you, but look, you've got this gift, why don't you use it? Well, friends, that's why it's called a gift. It's given to you to do with what you will. And as a friend of mine said this afternoon, it's nobody's business if we use our gifts or not. It's absolutely not. It's our business. And if we want to use what you've been given, healing hands. You know, you've got the type of hands that when you touch people, they say, oh my goodness, what a beautiful feeling that is just to have you touch me. That's a healing hand. And if you want to use that, if you want to make it become something other than just a touch, you can. Nobody's telling you. Some people can tell you, oh, you should do this and oh, you should do that. And Betty the Oracle says, you should do what you want to do, not what the rest of the world tells you to do, and not what the rest of the world decides you need to do for them or to choose for them. So, talking about pregnant with potentiality, what does that actually mean? Well, being the, as I said, the word pregnant means a lot. It means a lot of fullness, a lot of. I want to use the word mothering just because it's Mother's Day, but it just means so much. As I said, all of those words, expressive, suggestive, pointed, telling, revealing, that's pregnant. That's thinking about all of these plans that you may have. And then you add the potential to it. You think, oh, wow. It could go from being this tiny little thing you thought of to something really, really huge. And today when I was looking through my books to see, anybody who's listened to me on John's podcast knows that I love to read. And I love to read words that make sense and words that will offer something to think about. I found Dr. Deepak Chopra's The Seven Spiritual Laws of Success. And I remember reading this about 10 years ago when I was working and in the middle of working and wondering what else I was going to do, wondering about those gifts that I'd been given. So it starts with, this is the first part of the book, is the law of pure potentiality. And above that is written, in the beginning, there was neither existence nor non-existence. All this world was unmanifest energy. It's from the Hymn of Creation, the Rig Veda. I found that very interesting when I read it. All this world was unmanifest energy. Wow. So let's get into what Dr. Chopra has written. The law of pure potentiality, the first spiritual law of success, the law of pure potentiality, says that our essential state is one of pure potentiality. Pure potentiality is pure consciousness. It is the field of all possibilities and infinite creativity. Our physical body, the physical universe, everything in the material world comes from the same place. A field of silent, unmoving awareness from which anything is possible. There is no separation between this field of energy and our spiritual essence, ourself. This field is our own self. And when we know that our essential nature is one of pure potentiality, we align with the power that manifests everything in the universe. Knowing who we really are gives us the ability to fulfill any dream we have. Because the same field that nature uses to create a forest, a galaxy, or a human body can also bring about the fulfillment of our desires. Anything is possible in the field of pure potentiality, because this field is the source of all power, all intelligence, and infinite organizing ability. Therefore, success in life depends on knowing who we really are. When our internal reference point is our spirit, our true self, we experience all the power of our spirit. When our internal reference point is the ego or self-image, we feel cut off from our source, and the uncertainty of events creates fear and doubt. The ego is influenced by objects outside the self, circumstances, people, and things. It thrives on the approval of others. It wants to control because it lives in fear. The ego is not who we really are. The ego is our social mask. It is the role we are playing. The need for approval, the need to control things, the need for external power are all fear-based. This kind of power is not the power of pure potentiality. The power of the self, or true power. Self-power is a true power because it is based on the laws of nature and comes from knowledge of the self. Self-power draws things that we want to us. It magnetizes people, situations, and things to support our desires. This support from the laws of nature is the state of grace. When we are in harmony with nature, we create a bond between our own desires and the power to make these desires materialize. Mother Earth, just saying. How can you experience the law of pure potentiality? One way is through the practice of silence and meditation. This means tuning out the world and taking time to simply be. Imagine throwing a little stone into a still pond and watching it ripple. That's what you do when you go into silence and introduce your intention. Even the faintest intention ripples across the field of universal consciousness that connects your desire with everything else. This field can orchestrate an infinity of details for you. This is the pregnant part. But if your mind is like a turbulent ocean, you could throw the Empire State Building into it and you wouldn't notice a thing. Practicing non-judgment is another way to experience the law of pure potentiality. When you are constantly judging things as right or wrong, good or bad, you create a lot of turbulence in your internal dialogue. This turbulence constricts the flow of energy between you and the field of pure potentiality. In the silent space between your thoughts is a state of pure awareness, an inner stillness that connects you to true power. Through the practice of non-judgment, you silence your mind and access your inner stillness. Another way to experience the law of pure potentiality is to spend time in nature. Mother Earth, just saying. By observing nature, you begin to sense the harmonious interaction of all the elements and forces of life. The lavish display of abundance in the universe is an expression of the creative mind of nature and of your own mind as well. I just added that part. Just by tuning in to the mind of nature, Mother Earth, you will access the field of pure potentiality and infinite creativity and spontaneously receive creative thoughts. Whether it be a stream, a forest, a mountain, or a sea, connecting with nature's intelligence will give you a sense of unity with all of life and help you to get in touch with the innermost essence of your being. This essence is full of magic and mystery. It is fearless. It is free. When you are grounded in the knowledge of your true self, you never feel fearful or insecure about money or fulfilling your desires. You never feel guilty about wanting or having an abundance of anything, because you realize that the essence of all material wealth is life energy. You know that your desires are inseparably connected with everything else. Your very desire is not your own. It's an evolutionary impulse coming through you. So why would you doubt it? That impulse is part of the greater pattern, the gift, which is to grow and evolve into greater abundance and creativity. The law of pure potentiality says that you are consciousness itself, both as it manifests in the material world and as it lies unmanifested in your being. With the knowledge and practice of this law, you can put yourself in harmony with nature and create with carefreeness, joy, and love wherever you go. In the midst of activity, carry your stillness within you. Then the chaotic activity around you will never overshadow your access to the field of pure potentiality. And then he's got a few little ideas to experience the law of pure potentiality. Take time each day to be silent, to connect with your spirit, to just be. Practice non-judgment. Begin each day with the statement, "Today I shall judge nothing that occurs." And throughout the day, remind yourself of that statement each time you catch yourself judging. Commune with nature. Silently observe the intelligence within everything. Watch a sunset, listen to the sound of the ocean, or simply smell the scent of a flower. And that is the law of pure potentiality, as Dr. Chopra has written it. I would like to add this whole theme of Mother's Day, the month of May, and being pregnant with potential. It's a wonderful way to begin to realize who we each are, as Dr. Chopra said, and what our capabilities are. And however you spend this month of May, honor yourself and those you love. Honor your surroundings. Honor the good in your life. Sometimes we have to look hard to find it, but it is there. Realize your potential and honor it. How? By looking in the mirror and telling yourself, you are perfect. Just the way you are. Happy Mother's Day to all the mothers, all the nurturers out there. If you want to learn more about me and my work, please check out my Betty Collins E-Factor Facebook page and my personal Facebook page, Betty Collins. Thanks for listening. Back to you, John.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to New Finland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. Tonight's guest is no stranger to the realm of energy healing. She comes from a long line of psychic healers, and she even found out at a young age she has what we call hot hands. This would in turn bring her life circling around the idea of a magic energy healing that's inside her. She's been psychic her whole life, which means she sees things, hears things, and knows things others simply do not. Tonight's guest has studied astrology, numerology, aromatherapy, crystals, pendulum work, reincarnation, and different esoteric schools of thought. She's fascinated by the untapped potential of energy in all of its forms, both manifest and unmanifest. And to top it all off, if she's not busy enough, what can I say? She's a little bit into yoga, just a wee bit. She owns her own yoga studio. Yeah, that's right, her own studio in League City, Texas, called Yoga Lola Studios. She's also a published author of just the most amazing book. She has a non-mainstream approach to healthcare and maintenance and advocates for strong self-care practices when it comes to avoiding breast cancer. Keyword avoiding, because the title of her book is Fighting for Our Tits, which, I mean, I gotta say, is the greatest the best title for a book ever. She has a BA in political science as well as extensive education in wellness areas as well, including a 2-year degree in Ayurveda. Currently working on her PhD in comparative religion, because, I mean, you know, she just can't get enough spirituality. A 500-hour certified yoga teacher, and she has 20,000 hours of teaching. Tonight, she teaches us. Tonight, my guest is Lola. Lola, 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 Scarborough. Lola, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great, John. Thank you for that fantastic intro.
You know what? I take care of the people who send me notes. I take care of them. What can I say?
Well, thank you for that.
Lola, you got a pair of hot hands. How did this all begin?
Well, my grandmother was a healer. By the time I was 9 years old, she had given me books on Edgar Cayce, psychic phenomena. So in my family, it was not unusual to approach life with the idea that there was a lot of unseen, untapped energy. So I was about 12 years old, and I was sitting at the table, and my grandmother was doing some healing work on someone, and then she walked over, and she grabbed my hand. And she said, you've got the hot hands. get over here. And so from then on, I have been doing healing work. So I've been at it for a while. I'm 69 now. But, yeah, everyone in my family, we believed in the unseen and knew the unknown, and it was very normal for us.
It's so great to grow up in an environment with that kind of thought, and then that kind of process is actually normalized. And, you know, I can only imagine how that has fostered just this beautiful spirit within yourself. You know, you came from the absolute perfectness, the breeding ground, so to speak, for all your psychic gifts. Tell me a little tiny bit about your psychic gifts. I know you said you see things, hear things, and know things. So, well, how exactly does that work for you, Lola?
Well, I'm primarily clairaudient. I hear things. And of course, clairvoyant, sometimes I perceive things too. So people will get on my table, and sometimes when my hands are going out, I see what's stored in their energy field and can recount traumatic events that they've been through, in fine detail. Other times I've been working with people and I will ask them if they have a condition, and they'll say, no, I don't. And then I'll suggest that they go and get checked up on. They go in, and sure enough, they have the condition. So, and it's like I hear things. I don't really, if anyone's ever had a clairaudient experience, I'm sure they'll resonate with the fact that it's like you hear it inside your head, and it's, you know, it's not your own voice. You know that it's a voice coming from the ultimate intelligence, whatever it is you call that ultimate intelligence, and it's sharing that information with you so that you can help others. And there have also been times when I've gotten a message that someone has come to my table and they have medical proof that whatever is their condition is their condition, and I'll receive a message that their condition is gone, and I will tell them to go get retested, and it's gone. I mean, so it's just, it's magical. And it's its own process. I don't control it. I simply allow it and listen to it. And my grandmother was, I guess they call it, she would do psychic surgery. That's not something that's a specialty of mine. But people would tell her that they would have something wrong with them. And she would go in and remove tumors. She would dissolve kidney stones. And she could do it all at a distance because, of course, you know, with energy travels. It doesn't matter if someone's present physically or not. So she was an astonishing healer. And because of her, because of the power of belief of what this is, I've never doubted that it's real because I would see with my own eyes what she could do. So it never occurred to me not to believe in it, which is the opposite situation that a lot of people encounter.
I know you've often employed your abilities as a healer and have been able to help clients find and fix problems all your life. Can you give me some examples of some things you've actually had a chance to work on yourself?
Yes. Once I had a woman come in, she had an autoimmune condition where her body was attacking her liver, and she was sick. I didn't know what was wrong with her because it was the first time I'd seen her, and I don't ask people what's wrong with them. So she got on the table and my hands went over her liver and it was flaming hot. And when we got done, I said, oh my God, what is wrong with your liver? And then she told me about this autoimmune condition. And 3 weeks later, she went in and saw her doctor, the doctor who was handling this work, and the condition's gone. Another time I had a woman come to my table and I had my hands over her, and I said, I'm going to share something with you, and I hope it doesn't upset you. I just want to share what I'm experiencing. I said, I feel like you're pregnant, but not pregnant. And she told me then that the baby had died in utero, and she was like 3 months pregnant, and she was waiting to go and have the DNC procedure to remove the baby. Another time I was working with a woman. Her father was a Vietnam vet. Again, I didn't know anything about her. And I told her when we finished the session, I said, you know, I saw your father here. I said, and he wanted me to tell you he was very, very sorry for what he did, And he was just, like, crying. And I told her, I said, and I have a terrible headache on the right side of my head. Well, it turned out that he had committed suicide in the car outside when she found him. So those are just some of hundreds of stories that I have. It's just, it's an incredible gift to have, and it's incredible to be able to work with people that way.
Ghosts and fairies and angels, oh my. Ghosts and fairies and angels, oh my. Okay, so you see energy. Let's talk a little tiny bit about this ghost thing. I'm deeply involved, of course, with that realm. I love the whole ghost hunting thing. It's definitely my cup of tea. And every now and again, you mentioned that it's not your strongest skill, but you have come across what I guess we would call a spirit. Tell us a little tiny bit about that energy and what you've seen.
Well, whenever I've had the experience to come across a ghost, my grandmother and I, we lived in an old farmhouse out in Georgia. And one day I looked up and I saw this, he was a man with pretty good girth, and he had on overalls and a white shirt that was smeared with grease, clean shaven, probably about 66 years old. And I looked up, we were sitting at the table, I said, Grandma, do you see him? She said, yeah. And I said, could you tell me what you see? And she described exactly the same thing I saw. And he would come in and out of the house. And it wasn't, he didn't know we were there. You know, sometimes the ghost will know you're there, but it's like where whatever realm he was in, he couldn't see us, we could see him. He didn't move things around or anything like that. He would just appear briefly and then disappear, and that went on for years. Another time I moved into a house in the Heights. It was an older house. And I would start trying to go in the door, and it would be like there was a force holding the door closed, and I thought, uh-huh. And, you know, I had a sense of a woman. I could smell her. Sometimes I smell scents that tell me that a spirit is around. I could always smell her when she was in. And I went next door and I asked the lady there, I said, has anyone who's ever lived in this house said that there's a woman ghost in there? She doesn't like to let me in sometimes. And the woman corroborated that there was indeed a woman there that would sometimes block other people from coming in. So finally she got used to me and she stopped blocking the door. You know, and I just, when people pass on, something that's really interesting to me is that a lot of times I haven't seen these people. In one instance, I haven't had any contact with the person in 40 years. It was my ex-husband's brother, and I divorced him when I was 19. And I woke up one morning about a year or so ago, and I told my husband, I said, I think this is Hunter passed. I said, she would have to be close to 99. She told me she was on her way out. So I went, I looked up the obits in that area, and she had passed on 3 months ago. It took her a little while to get to me, but she did. And I've had lots of visitations like that. The most recent was, I have had two divorces. So my second ex-husband, his mother passed away, and I had seen her a couple days before, and we were in the house, and then all of a sudden the fire alarm just went off like crazy out of nowhere, and I knew then that she had passed, and sure enough. So just things like that, they come, and I've had that happen I don't know how many times with different people that I have met that I haven't seen in a long, long time. They just stop by to say bye on their way out.
Can't imagine what it's like to get a visit from a fairy. Now, here in Newfoundland, you know, we got the whole Irish thing going on up where we're to, and the fairies are actually evil things from where we're to, but for some reason, I don't really know if that's what you're going to be talking about tonight. Your contact with fairies has always been strong. Why don't you tell us a little tiny bit about that?
Well, when I work with fairies, you know, they don't look like the Disneyland Tinkerbell. They look more like those little holly berry dolls. When I was in Hawaii with my husband, we went on a trip to Hawaii, and we were out in an old forest, and we were being led there by a guide. And I heard someone calling to me, because they've always spoken to me. And I walked over to a tree stump, and she was outlined clear as day. I mean, she looked like one of, I'm trying to remember if I've got the name of the doll right. I think they're called Holly Berry dolls. But she was scrubbed in the trunk. She was clear as could be, and her facial expression would change. And I called my husband over. I said, come over here and tell me what you see. And he saw her. And so I talked to her for a few minutes, and then I told my husband, I said, I'm going to tell her goodbye, and I want you to just start shooting pictures. And he did, and one picture after another, and you could see the color swirling as she left, and then the scribing in the tree trunk was gone. But I also have felt them. I have felt their presence. I feel like they help me so much with the work. The ones that I work with, they're very tiny, and a lot of times, if there's something specific going on in the body that I need some help with, they'll just go right on in through the skin. They'll do their work, and they'll come back out and fly away. I know people think I'm crazy. I'm not, but it's not an ordinary experience. I do admit that, but I've been having those experiences ever since I was a child. And again, because of the kind of family I grew up in, no one ever told me that they weren't real.
And of course, you also have connections with angels, you know, and you've mentioned that this has actually have gotten stronger over time. Tell us a little tiny bit about your first run-in with an angel and maybe a more recent one.
Okay. Angels are a lot different than fairies. So one thing I have, my experience of them is they have a huge presence. Whenever an angel enters, you get the feeling of someone very tall and with a lot of energy. They're energetically, they just feel so much different. And I had something that was called, and this might not be familiar to any of the viewers, so I don't really want to get into it, but I had something that is called a spontaneous kundalini rising that was triggered as a result of some practices I was doing. And I didn't know what was happening to me. But at that time, I had a lot of different visitations from angels, and they would speak to me in other languages, which when I woke up, I couldn't even really remember what they said. But ever since then, they have been with me, and there are times when I'm working with people, and I clearly feel their presence, and it's usually corroborated by the client, because they'll say, I felt someone here. I felt someone touching me. And you were down at my feet, so I know it wasn't you. They come in like a flash of light, and I know that they're there. When I see that flash of light, and the temperature in the room gets a lot cooler when they come in. And I don't notice those kinds of environmental changes when the fairies show up, but I feel like that the fairies and I are always kind of like hanging out at the, you know, that fairy level realm.
Interesting stuff. I think it's, well, I'm kind of jealous, really, because I guess you're never lonely. there's always somebody around.
There's always somebody around.
I mentioned earlier that you studied astrology, numerology, aromatherapy, crystals, pendulum work. I mean, you name it, you've done it. What are some of your favorite, what are some of your favorite practices you've learned? And, you know, tell me about how you might use them with, say, an energy healing.
Well, the crystals they really accompany a healing practice very well. It's so funny. I had what I call my crystal awakening about 10 years ago because, you know, I've been in this environment for a long time, and I would hear people say, oh, the crystal's this, oh, the crystal's that. I feel this energy. I feel that energy. And I'd walk into a crystal shop and I'd be, meh, ain't nothing happening here to me. Then one day I walked in and I went, and I was like, so this is what they're talking about. So I've really gotten into crystals and I have a couple of different modalities that I use them with. I use my Merkaba, I call her MM, Mrs. Merkaba, to kind of find places in people's energy field where there's something that's just stuck and that, you know, it would take 5 Reiki appointments to get rid of it. Well, Miss Merkaba goes in there and really kicks their ass. I mean, just like that. Move that energy out of the energy field. I do what I call a 5-line clearing using the Merkaba. And then when I do the pendulum work, I'll go through and I'll kind of identify where there's disharmony in the chakra system first, and then I will select particular crystals. I probably have somewhere around 200 different kinds of crystals now in my crystal arsenal. And then I will use the appropriate crystal on the chakra center to bring it up to the vibrational energy that it needs to be so that the person is radiant again. That one is really good for working with people when they're depressed, they're lethargic, they just can't seem to get their, you know, their mojo going. So those are some of the ways I work with them with other people. I work with them on myself all the time. I don't have rocks in my head. I have rocks in my bed. My poor husband. I'll be sleeping there. I'll have rocks. Two in my hands. I'll have them all lined up. And I have perfected the art of sleeping without disturbing a single crystal. And I'll wake up and I'll have them, they'll be on me just like they were when I went to sleep. They're so powerful. They're like, in their own way, they're as living as we are. And they have their own way of communicating with us as well. So, you know, I feel like they're a gift from God, Goddess, Source, the one creator who created it all. And that, like the plant, they're here to help us.
I think it's incredibly interesting that you sleep with those crystals around you. And, you know, with my luck, I'd probably roll over them. I could see one of them getting wedged in my armpit. that must be quite the meditation, really, because you can't move. So let's play spiritual doctor for a second. Let's say my name's Johnny Mallard, Jonathan Mallard, whatever you want to call me. Just don't call me late for dinner. Imagine if I walked into your yoga studio or your place where you do your practice, and I walked in and I said, I'm low energy, I'm depressed, I've got a horrible ache in my right knee, and my back is shot, and on top of all that, I'm overweight and I can't be motivated to exercise. Help me. How would you go about helping someone who's just down and out, so to speak?
Well, the first thing you do with someone is you deal with the emotional condition. You can't deal with an underlying physical condition until you get the emotional vibe and the energy of the person at the right place. So the first thing I would say is, okay, have you ever heard of pranayama? And the response would probably be no. And I say, well, pranayama are breathing techniques that help you raise your energy. Could I show you one or two really simple breathing techniques? I'm going to show you how to take long, deep breaths. Then I'm going to teach you how to do something called alternate nostril breathing. And they'll say, yeah, you know, that sounds doable. You don't have to be energetic. You don't have to be in a good mood. You can do these breathing techniques while you're sitting and watching TV in between bites of popcorn. So he'd say, yeah.
I'm in. Okay. I'm down for that. You had me at popcorn. I'm in.
And so I would offer up those two breathing techniques, and then I'd say, you know, are you comfortable with the idea of a laying of hands or Reiki work, energy work? And if he said yes, then probably he would be or he wouldn't be at my studio. I'd say, let's go in and let's just do a Reiki session. Let me kind of feel what's going on for you. Let me feel where you're at. And so come on in, lay down. Don't tell me any more about your conditions, I said. Just come on to the table. And then I would do my typical Reiki session, which I don't use crystals or anything else for that. And when I would get to his knee, chances are really good. I would feel right away what the problem was. I've had really good luck with knees. Sometimes I don't seem to have a lot of luck with migraines, but livers and knees and cancer-like conditions, I seem to do pretty good at digestive issues. So I would work on his knee a little bit, and chances are, when I got done, he would say, what's so easy to say to me? He would say, oh my God, I feel so much lighter. And I would say, great. So let's talk about what your budget is for this kind of work, and, you know, let's see when is the next time you can come in and, you know, go home, take an Epsom salt bath, really, clear out your energy field. It's good for that knee of yours as well. And, let's see what else we can do to work together to brighten you up. And sometimes when I'm doing work on people, I get direct messages. And if I have any messages, I would share those with him. And if they resonated with him, maybe there would be things that he could take home and adopt. So that's how I would deal with it.
Amazing. It sounds to me like I should drop by sometime. Of course, I'll have to be in Texas, but that's okay. I mean, you know, if this whole global warming thing keeps up, it's going to be as cold as Newfoundland there soon enough anyway, so.
I know.
You published your first book, Fighting for Our Tits. And,
I did.
The best name for a book ever. I can't stop laughing. If that was the purpose, to make people smile and get interested, it was a great title.
It absolutely was.
Tell me a little tiny bit about the non-mainstream approach to healthcare and maintenance, and your advocate for strong self-care practices in that book, because I have a feeling this may be very near and dear to your heart.
It is. I've worked with a lot of women that come in with breast cancer, but actually that's not something that I have had to deal with in my life. But a lot of women who have gone through the whole routine of chemotherapy and radiation and also mastectomy show up at my door because they're suffering. The medications and things that they use are just brutal. I know that's what they use to fight cancer with. But what it does to the human body by the time they get done with it is pretty devastating. So I help women get back on the path to health after that sort of thing. But after seeing it so much and watching so many different heartbreaking things unfold around it, I thought, you know, I'm going to get out and I am really going to do my research on the different things that they've learned about breast cancer and, you know, the different ways that there are living and lifestyle methods that you can adopt that would help you perhaps front run this, minimize the risk of developing this disease. And so I have researched this topic probably for the last 8 years. The book is heavily research-based. I'm a real research rat. I love getting down into it. And I've got authorities from all over the world, and I've incorporated that into the book. But it has to start, anything in life that we're going to do has to start with us. So we have to be willing to look at the research, and if the research says, well, you know, probably a plant-based or primarily plant-based diet is one of our best ways to help ourselves avoid getting cancer, you have to be willing to let go of perhaps some of the eating habits that you've had. Or if you look at it and you realize that perfumes are an endocrine disruptor, saying, well, maybe I'll switch over to natural essential oils instead and just let go of my favorite, you know, Calvin Klein perfume.
It's funny you should say that. I actually got a bottle of Believe from Young Living here right now. I've started a new thing now where I put a little bit of essential oil in my closet. I actually record all my I record all my stuff in the closet, and well, what can I say? It kind of smells musty in here, so there you go.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, essential oils are amazing. You know, you need to know what you're doing. You need to make sure that you read about the different essential oils you're using because they're very powerful medicine. But you know, it doesn't take much. Thank God for the internet. I mean, you go to the guru, you type in, eucalyptus essential oil, and you can find out everything about that oil and what it's good for and when you shouldn't use it and, you know, how it benefits you and maybe if it's contraindicated for you. You know, I go to the, I call it the guru, the cosmic intelligence, you know, .com. You can find anything out there now. But my non-mainstream approach is primarily self-care, which is no longer mainstream. The idea for a lot of people is, you know, if something comes up for you, the first thing you do is go to the doctor. And I'm not saying people shouldn't go to the doctor, and I don't want it to come across like that. Go to the doctor, get a diagnosis, and then come home and see how you yourself can be a part of keeping yourself healthy. So let's say you keep getting colds all year long. And instead of going back again and again and again for antibiotics, maybe finding out, okay, what is it? What's going on with my emotions? Why am I getting sick so much? So looking at your emotions, looking at your diet. Could it be those 15 Dr. Peppers I'm drinking every day that might be knocking my immune system down? Well, maybe I should, you know, start cutting down on that. And also in chapter 9 of my book, I have something that's called Natural Paths to Healing. And I go over aromatherapy, acupuncture, acupressure. I go over things like yoga and different breathing techniques and mudras that you can do, and just all sorts of alternative healthcare practices that many people have never heard of. They have no idea that they even exist. Dancing, for example. I mean, put on your dancing shoes and get out there and sweat. You know, sweat lodges. Oh, one of my favorites. Sweat lodges, you know, you raise your body temperature, and then they found that if you raise your body temperature to a certain level for a certain amount of time, it actually slows off cancer cells. But people don't know this. Flotation tanks, chanting, binaural beats, you know, using sound healing and sound therapy, the gong. There's just, that's my longest chapter. It's about 100 pages. Because I go through so many different alternative types of healing methods. You know, getting a pet, gardening, getting out in the sun. I mean, there's just so many things that we can do.
Tonight's guest name is Lola Scarborough. She's an author and managing director at Yoga Lola Studios in Texas. www.lolascarborough.com for her book website so you can get your own copy of Fighting for Our Tits, A Non-Mainstream Way of Preventing Breast Cancer. Guys, that's www.lolascarborough.com. You can also check her out at www.facebook.com/LolaWritesBooks. She's got 500-hour certified yoga teacher. She's a Reiki master, Ayurveda consultant, and, of course, a life coach. To learn more about her yoga, www.yogalola.com. That's yogalola.com. Check out her website. Buy a book. I'm sure you can get it on her website there. Once again, www.lauraScarborough.com for the book, Fighting, well, for Our Tits. God, I love that title. Lola, thank you so very much for being on the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.
Thank you, John. It's been a real pleasure.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, @ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.